Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio Studio in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ Polly brings to you the award-winning Politically Direct. I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to thank you all for joining us here this week. Got a great episode coming up and an outstanding guest in just a few moments. But of course, I want to thank you all for tuning in from wherever and however you might be doing so throughout the Garden State. And of course, about the good old U.S. of A. Now you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen. And remember, it's politically direct NJ at yahoo.com. Once again, politically direct NJ at yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politically direct NJ. You could also hit up my own Instagram as well at Professor Fernando Uribe. Plenty of new followers, tons of new likes. I know many of you appreciate my Instagram stories. Little combination of politically incorrect humor, some political memes, sports, pro wrestling, motivational stuff, everything under the sun. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram story, which is why I continue to give you great ones each and every day. So look me up on Instagram whenever you can. Also, folks, hit me up on Twitter when possible, at Professor Afi Uribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com. The best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Folks, I'll tell you right now, no one does it better than Insider NJ. It's the best journalism you'll find each and every day on your PC, Mac, a smartphone or tablet. And without a doubt, I'm proud to be part of the Insider NJ family, having doing so since January of 2018 in the process, winning some awards on here, which is why Politically Direct is the award-winning podcast you know today. Of course, as I said, I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ family, which starts at the very top with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, who, you know, lately he's just become downright annoying with some of his liberal posts, but that's fine, whatever. You know, I'm sure he doesn't like some of my posts, and that's okay. I don't really care either, but, you know, I find a way to endure and, you know, tolerate Max. But, you know, aside from that, he's an amazing journalist and a phenomenal writer, so you definitely want to check out his columns. He's not sometimes downright delusional, but definitely an amazing journalist in his own right. Certainly other members of the staff, which include Fred Snowflack, another excellent writer, columnist, and journalist, along with Jay Lasseter, even Alan Steinberg, who also gets a little delusional too with his like sort of leftist and liberal points of view, especially his Trump derangement syndrome that he seems to be suffering from for the last 4 years. But in any event, you know, his columns are interesting. They're worth reading. They may not be worth believing, but they're worth reading, to say the very least, as well as the other contributors on Insider NJ. Folks, check out, again, the website, www.insidernj.com. Once you click on the website, upper right-hand corner, you will see the subscribe button. Do me a favor, click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you are up after waking up, maybe you're having coffee, maybe you're on the treadmill, maybe you're just watching the cable news shows. Hopefully you're watching maybe Fox and Friends, because listen, if you're watching Morning Joe, you'll be losing brain cells with Mika and Joe. I mean, they're just downright awful. And never mind, you know, CNN. I mean, my God, talk about like what a waste of airtime. But if you're watching those, maybe like me, you're watching the sports shows in the morning, like Undisputed on Fox Sports or The Herd maybe at noon. Guess what? Like everybody else, we're probably going through our inbox, right? On our phone, on our Mac, our PC, whatever, tablet. And guess what? Once you do, the morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. So folks, again, don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook. Of course, follow them on Twitter. And again, check out all of their excellent content at their website, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Folks, also, recent editions of the podcast, you can find always at www.insidernj.com/podcast. You'll see recent episodes after returning from some break last month in September. And certainly, we got some great guests here in the month of October already. And we'll continue on with another great guest in just a moment. But again, folks, www.insidernj.com/podcast. And you'll see all the episodes there. You can download them and listen to them anywhere, anytime, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Now, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the journalists, the management, our sponsors, or the staff. Folks, I hope you had a wonderful start to your October. I know last week we had a great episode with the communications, publicity, and press chair from the NAACP, Marcus Sibley. Certainly, these are the exclusives you're not going to hear anywhere else in the state of New Jersey, especially on a podcast like this. So we'll definitely keep it going. We have a great guest coming up in just a few moments. So you definitely want to stick around here as you're tuning in here. Once again, on insidernj.com/podcast. And folks, I always want to send a shout out this past weekend to the city of Union City, the honorable mayor and state senator in the 33rd legislative district, Brian Stack, along with the board of commissioners, specifically Union City Public Affairs Commissioner Lucio Fernandez, the selection committee, and everyone really involved in the city of Union City for last week's 2020 Union City Artist Awards. Now, this is an incredible event taking place in the city of Union City for many, many years now, and you'll be happy to know that your favorite broadcast journalist for the fourth consecutive year received the Excellence in Local Journalism and Broadcasting Award as a result of my media programs, which include not only this podcast every week via Insider NJ, but also my Wednesday night podcasts, which include Talking the Hudson via Block Talk Radio, and in addition to that, my other media programs, which include Talk Politics, which airs online every week via the Hudson Media Group, and NJ On Air, as well as Real Talk with Fernando Uribe via Eisen and Jay live every night via the website www.eisenandjay.org/real-talk. And I can't say enough, folks, really, about how humbled I felt to be at the awards dinner last week. It was a beautiful, Friday night to be outdoors. Certainly, once again, an incredible event to be at and to be honored again for the fourth consecutive year is, I'm telling you, it's humbling, to say the very least. And folks, and again, if you know me, you know I'm not the most humble person. I'm probably the least humble person you'll ever find. But I felt very humbled last week to be surrounded by so many talented artists, journalists, writers, producers, musicians, just artists in general. It was a great, great evening last week. And again, I can't say enough about how privileged I felt to have not only this podcast continue to be honored into the Artist Awards, but my other media platforms as well. So it was a great, great time. I can't say enough about the turnout. It was amazing. It was a lot of comments and complimentary comments about my suit. Again, shout out to Express Men, because without them, I wouldn't be looking dapper like I do every single week on my media program. So shout out to them. And again, shout out to all of you folks who continue to make not just only this podcast on Insider NJ, but also my other media platforms that I mentioned, as successful as they've become. And they've been going strong almost 4 years now, since I started my first one in March of 2017. And since then, folks, I haven't looked back. So, but without you, my loyal listening audience on the podcast, and also my viewers on the online TV shows, the success of the shows would not be possible. So again, I thank you all from the bottom of my heart, because without you, folks, the success I'm enjoying would not be possible. So God bless y'all. And of course, thank you for always tuning in every single week on all of the media platforms I just mentioned. Well, folks, it's my pleasure today, here this week exclusively, to bring you just an amazing guest. And let me preface this by saying that here on Politically Direct, as you all know, I welcome everybody under the sun politically and ideologically, whether they're elected officials, whether they're activists, whether they are advocates. And as you all know, obviously, it's been documented for some time, having Garden State Equality on this program and plugging them as much as I do. Shout out to my good buddy, Christian Priscarino, a fellow Cowboys fan. I know we don't have a lot to cheer for lately, but hopefully we'll get it turned around. The season's still young. But folks, you know I'm a big advocate for the LGBT community. I have so many LGBT friends. And one thing that I can tell you that really resonates with me is the reason I stand up for a lot of them and always have is the fact that, listen, there's a lot of reasons to dislike Fernando Uribe. But one reason is the fact that I'm straight. And guess what? I'm never going to know what it's like to be disliked because of my orientation. So I've always been very fortunate. But you know what? Tragically, many of my LGBT friends that I've met since undergrad at Rutgers University in New Brunswick and grad school at Rutgers Newark have not had the same good fortune. And that's why I've always felt the need to stand up for them and to continue to be an advocate for them, whether it be on my media platforms or anything else that I do. So again, whether it's been Garcia Equality, the Hudson Pride Center in Jersey City, on my local podcast in Hudson County, even today, pleasure to welcome to the program the president of the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce, the Honorable Joseph Renga, joins us here on Politically Direct. Joseph, what's going on, brother?
Good afternoon, Fernando. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. It's good to have you on here, man. First and foremost, how are you and your family during COVID? Everyone happy and healthy? What's going on?
Everyone is happy and healthy and remaining safe. It's all good.
All right. I'm happy to hear that. So, folks, again, if you've not had a chance, do check out their website, which is www.njlgbtchamber.org. I know it's a mouthful, but just, folks, again, www.njlgbtchamber.org. You can check out all the resources that are available there, certainly the business directory. I know it's kind of difficult for them, I'm probably, to have events like other Chamber of Commerces that can't do it because of COVID. But tonight here on the podcast, you know, it's great to give them airtime and to talk about why they're so important. So, Joseph, for our audience that maybe isn't aware about the relevance and the sustained visibility of the NJLGBT Chamber of Commerce, how did it come about? And secondly, what got you involved, bro?
Well, how the chamber came about was back in 2000, 2013, I think it was. I was not a founding board member, but a group of people got together out of Newark and decided that it would be a good idea to have a Chamber of Commerce. And I don't know if you're aware or not, but back in 2004, the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce was formed. They're based out of Washington, D.C. And after the formation of our chamber here in New Jersey, we became an affiliate chamber to the National Chamber. And we are the only affiliate chamber here in the state of New Jersey. How I came about it was I'm a Jersey boy. I've always lived and was raised here in New Jersey.
Same here.
And
I've always...
Cool. And I've always worked in New York City. And when I was in New York City in around 2005, I became aware of a group called Out Professionals, which is the country's oldest and largest LGBT business networking organization. And I started going to their events, volunteering, and then ultimately became a board member and stayed with them for 10 years and served as president for a couple of years and created networking events for them for about 8 years. And at one of those events, I met a gentleman by the name of Medina, who was a founding board member of the chamber here in New Jersey. And he said, "Do you think you could do any events for us, create events?" And I said, "Yeah, I could possibly do that." I had never known that there was an LGBT Chamber of Commerce anywhere, let alone in New Jersey, or any local ones. I knew of the national one in D.C., but not of anything in New Jersey. And I created a couple of events, and I was asked if I wanted to join the board. And November will be my fifth year anniversary as a board member. And right now I'm the current president, but I'm still creating events every month.
That's amazing, man. And to hear about your perseverance and your persistence on it, I think is a testament to really how dedicated you are and really how much of a service you are providing for the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce. And folks, by the way, again, check them out on their social media. Make sure you like them on Facebook and follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Certainly, there's a lot of information out there for those of you that are LGBT business owners. Without question, I think this is an extremely beneficial component for you. And at the same time, you can tell that there are prominent sponsors that care infinitely, folks, about the NJ LGBT Chamber. When you check out their website, again, www.njlgbtchamber.org. Now, you know, Joseph, one of the things that I think our audience really wants to learn about today, and I'm sure it's something you can really, really delve into, is even before COVID, all right, even before COVID completely wrecked our lives in every which way possible, when it comes to nonprofit organizations like this, I know you mentioned right now at the onset that you were a board member early on, and because you've transitioned to becoming the president, with that incurs an enormous amount of responsibility. But what were some of the challenges that the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce faced before COVID when it came to fundraising, when it came to organizing, when it came to mobilizing? What can you share with our audience about those challenges, man?
Probably the greatest challenge prior to COVID and even during COVID, right, because you're not out of it, is visibility. When you think of the LGBT community, I want to come onto this podcast today and talk to you about LGBT issues, probably the first thing that would come into your head is some sort of social issue, trans rights or gays in the military or some other thing. The last thing on anybody's list is thinking that there's an LGBT business community. So the biggest challenge has always been visibility. Even within the community, every time we do an event, whether it's in person, when we used to do quite a bit of in-person events, about five a month all around the state, always a first timer or people who just happen to see us in a place will say, "I didn't know that there was an LGBT Chamber of Commerce." You know, it's just something you don't think about. You don't think about there being an LGBT community. So that's been the biggest challenge overall. Once people become aware of us, then they're very into it. And that includes corporate sponsors. We have corporate sponsors. They're quite generous to us, and they're very much into supporting the community, I must say. But people have to know that you're there. So it is visibility.
Well, absolutely. And folks, again, if you're just sort of joining us here and you're listening to the great conversation we're having here with Joseph Renga, the president of the NJ LGBT Chamber of Commerce, just to give everyone sort of a better understanding here, the purpose, folks, again, on their website is to bridge the connect with New Jersey's LGBT-friendly and allied businesses community, Certainly, they are New Jersey's premier LGBT business organization dedicated to strengthening LGBT businesses in the New Jersey tri-state area. Of course, some of the guiding principles, I think, which are really important for our audience to learn about today, Joe, is number one, heighten the economic strength of LGBT-owned, friendly, and allied businesses, elevate the regional LGBT business community influence, grow the consumer market for LGBT goods and services, increase the economic sustainability of existing LGBT-friendly and allied businesses, and help to attract new LGBT-friendly and allied businesses to choose New Jersey to make their home. Joe, I don't want to sort of put you on the spot here, but I mean, there's a lot of guiding principles here. Which is the one that really stands out for you as perhaps, again, this is pre-COVID, that really stands out as probably the most essential one, bro?
Well, of all the things you've listed, I mean, it's really tough to choose the most important one. But I think understanding first the LGBT consumer and the impact that we have as consumers in this country, and thus then the impact the LGBT business community has on this in the country. LGBT consumers have an annual spend of over $915 billion a year in this country. And as business owners, we contribute an estimated $1.7 trillion to the economy. So that's the large big picture, the amount of money that we contribute into the economy and the amount of money that we have to spend. The LGBT household has 23% more disposable income than the straight household. And that's just purely because of I hate using the word lifestyle, but the lives that we lead. Most, while we have, you know, while we can get married now and adopt children and have, you know, the classic family unit, most LGBT people don't do that. So we don't have that economic expense, that 20-year commitment of raising a child and doing and spending all of the money that goes into raising another human being or more than one human being. And so we have that extra money that can impact the economy in many, many ways. And it's very interesting that to me, if I'm ever at, we just don't do LGBT events. We participate with other chambers of commerce all the time,
sure.
Partner on events, and we go to trade shows and industry shows. When you bring those statistics out, all of a sudden people's eyes widen because no one ever thinks about that. Because, you know, when you think of LGBT, as I was saying in the beginning, you think of social issues and not necessarily business. But we're there, and we do have impact. One of the things that I just ran a webinar in October based on an annual study that a market research firm out in San Francisco does an annual LGBT consumer survey. And it's amazing the picture that is drawn of what we will purchase, our purchasing decisions. And this year, we've supported the survey every year that I've been a board member here. We promote it. We ask people to join it. And this year, we had so many respondents who took the survey, the national survey, but said they found out about it through the chamber. We have so many respondents that we got our own survey. So we even got a picture of the New Jersey LGBT consumer. And what are our purchasing and our spending habits? And with that kind of information, I'm very much into marketing stuff and understanding who my client is because I'm in the business of sales. I mean, my role as a president and a board member for the chamber is completely volunteer. So I do have a job. I do have a business that I run that is my livelihood. And I'm always interested in demographic information and marketing information for my client base. And when we got this information, I created a webinar and asked the two founders of this marketing firm in San Francisco if they would speak to the points that needed to be taken away about what the survey shows. And we had this webinar. We had well over 100 people attended, and that included people from Fortune 1000 companies, chief diversity officer people, marketing people, and we had politicians on it because they wanted to know who the LGBT consumer was in their area. So once you realize that how impactful our community is to the greater fabric of the state, then all of a sudden, you know, it becomes very interesting in what we do, and that really is the importance of what the chamber does.
Well, listen, it sounds really, really laborious, but it's also fulfilling, man, because like any nonprofit work, you have to put in the hours. Oftentimes, for a lot of board members for any nonprofit organization, this is stuff that cuts into their daily routine. Oftentimes, their employment, like you just mentioned. So I can hear the dedication in your voice, man. I can hear how resolute you are to helping make the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce succeed, which isn't easy. And it really, really can be demanding. And I sort of have to ask you, and folks, again, you know, when you obviously during the podcast and even afterwards, if you're interested in any membership, there, when you click on their website, njlgbtchamber.org, you click on the multiple tabs, you see Member Center. There's some reasonably priced membership levels there for business. There's a gold, silver, and bronze package. There's a solo entrepreneur package as well. You can see it there on the membership levels. And as in addition to that, folks, if you're interested in board and volunteer opportunities, there's another tab there as it pertains to board, again, and volunteer opportunities in the Get Involved tab on the main page there. So, listen, Joe, I got to ask you those because I know that, as I mentioned earlier, COVID has certainly thrown a wrench into every aspect of our lives. You alluded to the fact that in a normal year, hosting events, maybe up to five in a year, was becoming the norm. We all know that because of COVID-19, that is no longer the case. We know, for example, I'm a member of the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We know that our last event was in early March, right before the state was shut down. And since then, everything's been virtual. We're trying to get something off by the end of the year. We don't know if it's going to happen. Obviously, it has to be outdoors. What are some challenges that COVID has presented to the NJ LGBT Chamber?
Well, the challenge really, and not to correct you, but we don't do five a year. We do five a month around the state. That's what we're up to.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
But to your point of, you know, it really does, and I don't mean this just of myself. I'm really in awe of anyone who volunteers because you're right, as you describe it, it's a commitment. You have to believe in it, and it's a lot of work, and it can totally impede on your personal life. But I've met people for other organizations who are, you know, just as much more dedicated. So you have to take your hat off to anyone who's willing to give time because they understand the greater good and are trying to achieve it. With regard to events and to get people out, you know, throwing events is not just about throwing parties. You want to get people out there to meet each other and to know that there are other people who are in your same situation. You're a small business owner. You're a member of a minority community. You can be a member of multiple minority communities, you know. And so we had to immediately pivot. Our last in-person event prior to going into, you know, quarantine, if you will, was the last week of February in Asbury Park. And we immediately had to pivot when quarantine was, enforced, and we went virtual. And what the biggest challenge was keeping people motivated. You know, I think people, it's funny, the arc of this pandemic is very interesting to me. People probably thought it was going to be over in a couple of weeks, maybe a month. We'd all go back to work and it would be done. And it wasn't, you know. And then we approached the summer and it still wasn't. And now we're in the fall and we're still kind of at home. And people are only now, if you can believe it, I speak to small businesses every day. And only now people are really kind of coming to grips with the fact that this is open-ended. And so now they have to redefine their businesses. How do I do what I was doing prior to being able to go out and take, you know, in-person meetings and things of that nature? And how do I network? So it's about encouraging people. It's about, as an organization, it's about being very proactive and reminding people we're still here. You know, the chamber didn't fold its tent and go away. And I think we've done a good job with that. And I know other chambers who have done a good job. That job with that, particularly the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
So, you know, that's where you have to really mobilize. You know, this pandemic reminds me of the early years of AIDS, and you really have to mobilize to deal with it because you don't know what's hitting you, quite frankly. You know, you can't see the enemy. It's in the air. And so you just got to work around that, grab people by the collar and say, hey, we'll deal with this. This is what we're doing. you know, get on board with us and nothing will really change except you doing everything from home, you know?
Absolutely. And again, COVID has just created this ridiculous challenge for any nonprofit organization to be able to thrive and to keep membership, you know, engaged and connected and at the same time busy. And I know that coming up this week, Joe, I want to give you the floor here. A couple big things going on tomorrow, October the 8th, a Thursday. I know we got something great in the morning that's virtual. And then we got something going on later in the evening, I believe, that's also going to be virtual. But I want to give you the floor. Not virtual. There's a virtual event during the morning, but there's something else at night. I want to give you the floor, man, to tell our listeners today as to vital events going on tomorrow, October the 8th, in the state of New Jersey via the NJ LGBT Chamber.
Well, thank you very much for letting me have a shameless plug for our calendar of events. I appreciate that. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, we have our virtual coffee connection. And it's a Zoom meeting. You can register for it by going to our website, going to our events calendar, look at tomorrow's date. In the morning, it's there. You just click on it, register. And it's an hour and a half of people just getting together, and we talk about everything. You know, we do the typical networking thing of, you know, go around the room, if you will. What do you do? What are you looking for today? What kind of clients are you looking for? And then we just, you know, it's turned into, this pandemic has surprised me insofar as, I don't know if you've noticed this, Fernando, but I see people, you know, in spite of what we see on television, on news coverage, I find people to be much more friendly and much more, I live in a big apartment complex, and I find my neighbors to be much more of, you know, good morning, how are you? And that's what I'm seeing on our virtual events, that people are just want to talk about anything. They realize they're stuck at home alone for the most part. They might have family members, someone they live with, but they want to chit-chat and just talk about anything. And we come up with ideas about business ideas and what are you doing? What's new? What do you want to do from home? And as chamber board members, there's usually two or three of us hosting it. Our responsibility is to generate that conversation. So that's what we'll do tomorrow morning on our virtual coffee connection. And I really invite everyone to come and join it. It's a very good crowd. And you do get to make virtual friends, which is fantastic. You know, people you might not see because someone's in, you know, Cape May County, and then I'm up in Bergen County, you know, and we may not see each other in person, who knows when, not just because of COVID-19, but because we just don't travel physically in the same circles anyway. But you make friends and you make connections. And then in the evening, we have our event in the evening is happening in the Highlands at a place called the Seafair, and it's called Pride at the Seafair, and it is a drag show. And the headliners of the show, there's seven performers, and the headliner is a very well-known New York City downtown club member named Amanda Lepore, and also a drag superstar named Jan, who was on episode 12, a very popular performer on episode 12 of RuPaul's Drag Race. So it'll be a networking event. We're doing it in co-hosting duties, in co-sponsorship with the Eastern Monmouth Chamber of Commerce. And it's going to be fantastic. It'll be outside. Everything will follow all CDC guidelines for social distancing and safety purposes. And a part of the revenues that come from the event are going to go to a non-for-profit organization called Project Real. They are based in Central Jersey, associated with the Visiting Nurses Service, and they help homeless LGBT youth, and they work with them. So it's a really good cause, and part of the proceeds for tomorrow night's event will be there. And it's in the Highlands at the Seafarer, a really cool place on the water. It's a like a beer garden type of setup, and we'll be completely outside. It's going to be really cool, and I wish everyone joins us.
Well, listen, again, you know, one of the things I take pride with on this program, Joe, is plugging any organization that I can, having conversations about issues that are worthwhile, and certainly giving a platform to nonprofits, because I do a lot of volunteer work. I'm a very big advocate for the American Cancer Society, for example. So every October, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I raise money for breast cancer research. You know, it's a cause that's near and dear to me. I'm sure we've all been affected somehow by breast cancer. So when I my annual campaign of a professor's quest to save breasts, I mean, hey, that's my way of giving back and doing what I can philanthropically. And I think that's, it's a fulfilling aspect, I think, of existence to do that, to give your time to worthwhile causes, causes you believe in. And, you know, especially on this program, you know, Joseph, one of the things that I'm very much a fan of is giving an opportunity to speak to advocates like yourself, elected officials, organizations in general, where, listen, I personally don't have any bone to pick with the LGBT Chamber of Commerce or regards to equality. But you know what? Let me pick your brain a little bit politically here, Joseph, if you don't mind. These are polarizing times. And when it comes to LGBT issues, they can certainly elicit certain responses. You know, I'm someone, you know, raised in a traditional sort of Latino family. You know, conversations you usually have about issues involving, you know, gender and orientation and everything else, you know, those are unsettling conversations, you know, I think in any community. And I remember growing up, for me, where I grew up in Hudson County, predominantly a very Latino type of, you know, area. And these are, you know, they're convos you don't, not that you don't want to have. They're just convos that sometimes, you know, you feel awkward having with your parents and family. And oftentimes LGBT issues are things that hit us close to home. And I think that, you know, now more than ever, I think as I said at the beginning of the show, you know, one reason I'm such a big advocate for my LGBT friends is because, you know, I've had it very easy. You know, I'm a straight male. There aren't a lot of reasons to dislike me. I mean, maybe personally, and some people do dislike me personally because of my show and some viewpoints I have, but I'm never going to experience the dislike of like, oh, I don't like Fernando because he's straight. Oh, I'm never going to experience bigotry like that, you know? And that's unfortunate that even still in 2020, that my LGBT friends that I've met during undergrad, during grad school, and even through all walks of life still face like a lot of considerable challenges. Like, do you feel like a crusader even with your place on the executive board?
I would never consider myself a crusader. Because I think I'm too much of a low-key guy to be that. But I feel that anyone who's willing to be a part of a group, whatever that is, because it affects you personally and is willing to stand up for your group, whoever it is, whatever the cause is, and it doesn't have to be anything to do, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be your sexuality.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be your race. It doesn't have to be your religion. You know, the moment to, you know, I don't want to be philosophical about it, but the moment you realize, you know, I'm a middle-aged gentleman. I'm not a young guy and by any stretch anymore, but when you realize, as you get older, and I sound like my father or mother maybe talking like this, you know, as you get older, you realize, you know, we are only here a short while, and you really have to stand for something, you know, and who are you? And that really is what I see moves a lot of people and myself. You know, you mentioned the kind of family and the society, if you will, that you were brought up in, and it's purely by happenstance, right? You don't choose the family you're born into. Mm-hmm. I come from a very large Italian family, and I can tell you as personal experience, I didn't come out of the closet. I mean, I always knew I was gay. I never questioned it. There was never anything like, oh, I don't know. No, I knew what I was. But I didn't come out of the closet until I was 42 years old, and by that I mean to my family. And it was really – it's an unbelievable thing. And I always wondered about that, and I never criticize anyone for coming out early or coming out late or identifying who you are in any given way, because everyone has their own personal timeline. But, you know, when you realize – what I realized I didn't have in my youth by being closeted – you know, I didn't experience being a gay man in my 20s. Now, when I was in my 20s, that was the 1980s, and that was the whole AIDS epidemic was going on then in full force. Not mm-hmm. that it's not diminished today, but it's just not covered like it was. I was completely aware of it, but I was not out at clubs and bars and things like that because I was closeted, and I was quite frightened especially in business, because I was a young business person. I was afraid that, you know, it would be held against me. And even to this day, sometimes I catch myself, not that I really care anymore. No one can harm me or anything like that. But you do see it in subtle ways when you're part of any kind of a group that's not the larger population or the dominant group. So anyone who stands up, I think, is a crusader for anything, or anyone who's just willing to say, yeah, this is who I am. If you don't like it, that's too bad. You know, good for them. It took me a long time, but I arrived at the party, so I'm happy with it. And that's why I threw myself into things like the LGBT business community, because I was a business guy. I'm a suit and tie guy. And so when I found, you know, that there was an LGBT business community, I didn't know there was really one, or I'd identified one anyway. I just ran with it, and it's been really great because of that.
Well, listen, that's a great story, and I think for a lot of our audience that's tuned in here today, Joseph, maybe a lot of my listeners can resonate with your story, and I think it's important to get those out there because you never know who you're inspiring, you never know who you're motivating by your personal experiences, and perhaps how challenging it was for you, and perhaps the amount of courage you had to exhibit that maybe others don't have right now. I think that that's something that is to be applauded, and it's something to be, you know, held in high regard. Like, as I said, you know, I'm never going to know what it's like to be, you know, to feel prejudice because of my orientation, you know, and I'm never going to know that. And I think that when you're younger, again, growing up in predominantly very traditional sort of, you know, in community, you see the, not the backlash, but you see like some of those taboo conversations that, quite frankly, we don't want to have, right? We don't have it. Oftentimes it's generational. Oftentimes it is something that it's difficult to sit down with, let's say, older family members and explain, like, okay, this is what is going on with LGBT family members or LGBT friends or whatever. And I think that is, it's monumentally important to be able to have those combos because, like I said, you know, it's 2020, you know, based on what you just disclosed, I mean, we're in the same age demographic, we're over 40. You know, I know what it was like going to college in the 90s, in the late 90s, and going to grad school in the early 2000s, where, let's be honest, you know, we're 26 days away from a presidential election. But think about it, 16 years ago, we were hearing language during a presidential campaign about whether or not to amend the Constitution. And mind you, I'm a history professor, so I am an enormous student of history. I am someone who loves to talk about the Constitution and teaches it thoroughly every semester to my students. The idea of amending what I would argue is our most sacred document to reflect that, I think it outraged a lot of people, bro. And like, it's 16 years isn't that long ago, but that was a major talking point. If you remember back in that election in 2004, there was one side of the aisle that said, hey, listen, maybe we need to amend, we already had the Defense of Marriage Act that was signed in 1996. But in 2004, you know, there was a possibility of trying to amend the document. And that can be, that was, I think, overwhelmingly, I think, traumatic for a lot of people. How do you recall it?
I did not know you were your history professor. That's fantastic. I was a history major for about 1 year in college. I love history too.
I
love history, and I love LGBT history, particularly pre-Stonewall. So I'm right with you. I'm a crazy history buff, and but I'm always stunned. I don't know what really to think about it. I am always stunned with the constant back and forth. You know, you could even talk about like Roe v. Wade. This was decided in what, 1972, 73, 74. I forget the year. I was a child at the time. But I mean, when you think about it, this is almost 50 years later, and this was decided back then. It's almost 50 years later, and people are still fighting it. I don't understand this. I just don't understand this. You know, I believe it was what happened a few days ago. Justice Alito and Justice Thomas kind of sent out, was it an email or something, about maybe rethinking legalization of LGBT marriage. I mean, what are you doing? You know, sending these triggers out that maybe some group should challenge this again. It was decided, you know? So this is like a pointless back and forth thing that really, to me, shouldn't be a part of of anything that comes before the Supreme Court. These decisions are made, let them go. You know, so it confuses me. It concerns me. I don't understand it. You know, it seems like I'm almost fatigued by it and think that these kind of things will be just a never ending struggle for every generation coming up. I don't get it. You know, I really don't understand it. You think these things were legal precedent has been set, and yet someone tries to find some loophole to challenge it in another way. I don't understand.
Well, I mean, that's one of the biggest complexities about the law, right? And I think I've always had these discussions with my attorney friends about how not innocuous, but how challenging the law can be and how it evolves. And as you just alluded to right now, certainly there are advocates that would try to find loopholes or new avenues to perhaps argue a new legal precedent, which I think is certainly frustrating. I think, especially in recent years, where if I remember correctly, in 2015, the Supreme Court decided on same-sex marriage. And since then, I mean, it's still challenged. I mean, again, it's one of the most unique aspects about our country and our republic is the fact that while the power of the federal government still remains intact, the idea of federalism is important. You know, the notion of states' rights, and in some regards, you know, some states take the 10th Amendment very sacredly and say, well, listen, you know, we believe in states' rights and we believe we should govern ourselves the way we feel we should. And not necessarily to hell with the federal government, but hey, we believe in our own sort of autonomy. And I think that's where, you know, as you say, you're a history fan and a history, you know, you're a history major. The idea is this is where it becomes challenging, right? Where like you don't have to be an attorney. You can just simply be someone that is trying to read up on history and understand that, hey, some people appreciate the sanctity of states' rights. I mean, a lot of states take that to heart, right, man?
Yes, they do. I mean, that's the strange thing is that people take these things to heart, you know? But you really can't, you know, one portion of society can't tell what another portion of society can do or what's allowable. You know what I mean? So
Sure. It
becomes a constant back and forth, you know? I mean, like when legalizing gay marriage came up as an issue, you know, in front of the Supreme Court, you know, I think, as I observed, and I'm certainly not a huge follower of every Supreme Court decision, but, mm-hmm. you know, they kind of, to me, waited until they saw which way the wind was blowing in public opinion. I think by the time the last case came up to the Supreme Court, something like 65% or so of the people in the country polled mm-hmm. didn't care. They thought, yeah, sure, gay people can get married. When you think about it, when you think about it as an individual person, who cares who I marry? You know what I mean? I mean, who
yeah.
cares? What does that matter to anybody, really, in a logical argument? Yet, it wouldn't be decided until you saw public opinion change and
sure.
things like that. You know, or you know what I mean? So the whole process is really kind of strange when you think about it. It's all very political and very measured about what will the larger group of society do. Think of a decision, you know, so everyone now is
sure.
looking over their shoulder. Even if you're a Supreme Court justice, you're just wondering, mm-hmm. oh, are we doing the right thing to look good? You know, I mean, back in June, I think it was of this year, it was decided that someone could not be fired. I forget the name of the case, could not be fired because they were transgender, just because they were transgender. And I was asked, mm-hmm. I was on another podcast and I was asked, what do you think of that? Is that an advancement? And they said, you know, any legislation, any law or any ruling that comes down that shows equality to everybody, no matter who you are, is good. However, prejudice is a personal thing. Prejudice is in your head. You know, you could be prejudiced about something. I wouldn't know it. You know, I could be prejudiced about something. You don't know it unless I tell you. So
sure,
prejudice
absolutely,
against
yeah.
anybody
mm-hmm.
or any group is such a personal and it's a quiet thing and it's underground and it's in your head and you can't police it. So while it's great that laws are put in place, when it gets down to the personal level of someone in a hiring decision, let's say, they can look at a resume, look at a name. I don't like the sound of that last name. Won't even bother to call them in for an interview. That happens all the time. So
sure, yeah.
while the laws
right.
are great, but be able to truly police personal people's personal decisions, because prejudice is a decision. You know, no one's born prejudiced. We're taught to be prejudiced about things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And at some at some point in your life, you become an adult and you think, well, I agree with the information I was raised on, or I don't agree with it. So it's a decision. We all make a decision to be prejudiced about something or a bunch of things or not. And that can't be policed, you know, and, you know, so that makes it tough to enact laws and stuff like that. So,
well,
I think these arguments will go on forever, and the fighting of laws will just go on long before I'm gone.
Fair enough, you know. And listen, and you're absolutely right. I think you just hit the nail on the head about how to define prejudice. Like, no one's born prejudiced. It's a character trait that you develop over time, and it's tragic.
Right, you're taught it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen. You know, Joseph, I mean, the only thing I'm prejudiced about is I'm a Yankee fan. I hate Red Sox fans. Okay, that's the only prejudice I live on. Okay, and I don't think anybody would call me a bigot. I think they call me smart, but I mean, again, that's the only prejudice that I know of that I exhibit on a daily basis. But getting back to your point about the way and the perception about certainly recent Supreme Court cases and the idea about marriage equality. I mean, I used to say this joke all the time when I used to do media and other appearances. I'm like, listen, gay people have just as much of a right to be unhappy as straight people. So, hey, you want to get married? Go ahead.
Exactly.
You know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, do your thing, you know. But on a serious note, without question, I think now I've seen in the headlines, we'll see exactly if now a window is opening, even a crack of it is opening, to whether or not to revisit some of these cases. And we all know that even on a state's rights level, some states are still sort of fighting, case law and precedent. So I think it's definitely something to keep an eye out for, I think, in the coming months, as we all know that it's most definitely certain that the composition of the Supreme Court is going to be changing probably in the next 30 days with the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett. So we'll definitely find out what happens with that. Getting back to the chamber, Joseph, and for my listeners tonight listening, certainly do keep an eye out as we'll be uploading this to the Insider NJ website later today. And certainly those events coming up on tomorrow, Thursday, October the 8th, a great event in the morning, certainly a great event at night. What else can you share with us about what's coming up in October, Joseph, that really stands out about other events in October or November?
Well, a really cool event that's coming up in October is a three-part series that begins next Tuesday. And one of our wonderful sponsors, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield, asked me to create a networking event for them that basically a signature event. Typically, if COVID-19 was not around, our signature events for our key sponsors are in-person events. Usually they're networking breakfasts or networking dinners. Mm-hmm. And but this year, clearly, we had to do something virtual. So what I created for them was a three-part event that begins next Tuesday, and it will be every Tuesday afternoon at 2 p.m. The first one is it is a pitch contest. And by pitch, I mean, if any of your listeners know, when you're in business or you're in sales, you have what's known as your 1-minute elevator pitch. And that is to say, you're in an elevator with someone you don't know, and you just introduce yourself and you give them your business card. And in 1 minute, which is the time it takes to ride an elevator from the top floor to the bottom, in one minute, you describe what you do, what business you're in, how you could possibly help them, and you exchange business cards and hope they call you and hope that you get their business card back. What this event is a pitch contest where the first session next Tuesday will be how to write a capability statement. And the capability statement, for those people who don't know, and I'll admit that I did not know what this was until someone told me, a capability statement is like a resume for your business, not your personal resume, but what your business is capable of in terms of the scope of work they can do, the type of work they can do, and it's like a resume for your business, as I say. That'll be next Tuesday. You'll be taught how to write it. A big thing that the Chamber of Commerce does is we get people certified as LGBT-owned businesses. The advantage to that is that you can get into the procurement stream of Fortune 1000 companies as a minority-owned business and go after RFPs, requests for proposals, and other bids. And Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield is one of those great companies that has committed to giving a portion of their annual spend in various places, in various ways of things they purchase, to minority-owned businesses. And what we're going to do is we'll have people write their capability statement. Of our certified businesses, we're going to pick four the following week they will give their present their capability statement and their 10-minute pitch about their business and what they do to a group of their peers, three judges. We will pick, those judges will pick two people out of the four, and those two finalists will go on to the following week, redo, take the notes that they've gotten about their capability statement, retweet those statements, tweak their pitch, and the following week they will be able to be in front of actual purchasing managers from Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield, the two finalists, and one will be picked as a winner who will, we will give some prizes out, probably professional headshots, and a 60 to 90 second commercial will be made about their business, and they will get to interact with direct purchasing managers from Horizon Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
Well, listen, that sounds really, really fun, and it sounds, I think, really interesting for the chamber to move forward with these type of events, and I think it's going to be immensely beneficial without question, I think, for everyone participating. Joseph, so a good job there by yourself and the
Thank
executive
you.
Board and just the LGBT Chamber of Commerce in general for putting this together, again, under the most difficult of circumstances, because we all know COVID, obviously, is right now here to stay in 2020. We're hoping that in 2021 we can sort of, you know, maybe reboot and start all over again and maybe not deal with this sort of physical calamity that we've been enduring this year. Joe, before I let you go, a couple of things I just want to pick your brain on again. I know we talked off the air, and I know you sort of alluded to it a little bit before, but let me just pick your brain again politically. Again, as I mentioned, 27 days to go.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, perhaps the most polarizing presidential election I can ever remember, and I'm over 40, and I've seen a few of them, but I can't remember ever in my lifetime one as polarizing as this one coming up in 27 days. The showdown, eventually, I think whoever people are pulling for, I think they'll be exhausted on the morning of November 4th. We'll see. Certainly House seats are up, Senate seats are up. But I have to ask you, because again, even doing some research before the show today, there is a concerted and very openly visible LGBT presence supporting the president, whether it's organizations called Gays for Trump or Log Cabin Republicans. It seems that there are some LGBT Americans who apparently have no problem supporting the president. As I alluded to, I think off the air, and just from previous episodes, my viewers know this, listening to, for example, Christian Foscarino, the executive director of Garden State Equality, you know, the state's largest LGBT advocacy group, you know, he's not shy about it. He openly is, you know, not supporting the president. He's openly supporting Joe Biden and Democratic candidates. And he's even gone as far, and again, I'm just looking at the transcript here, and he's even gone as far as saying that, you know, he can't understand how anyone who's LGBT could remotely support this president based on what he has said and or done. There seems to be some literature out there, Joseph, that would suggest that the president has enacted some policies along, let's say, economic lines and other things that seems to make some LGBT Americans say, hey, you know what? I can support him. That's fine. I can tolerate him, you know, as opposed to the opposite side. You know, as a gay man, again, just speaking for you, I know you're not speaking for the chamber itself, but when you hear that sort of rhetoric from those around the country that are LGBT and say, yeah, listen, I can live with another 4 years of the 45th president. How does that make you feel?
It's frustrating. Just absolutely frustrating. I am not a supporter personally. I'm not speaking on behalf of the chamber. I am not a supporter of the president, and it has nothing to do with being a Democrat or Republican. I'm actually an independent. I have a number of friends who are within our community. They're gay, and they are Republicans, and none of them support this particular president. I think that's what it comes down to most often. I've followed politics since I was a teen. Election
same here.
Night that I followed was Carter versus Ford. So I'm much older than you, and I always loved it. Election night's a big night for me. I'm one of those people who likes to go to an election night party.
Yeah,
I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. I don't get it. And it's not even. It has nothing to do with even LGBT. In my mind, the president, whoever that is, whether it's, you know, a conservative or a liberal, Republican or Democrat, that person represents the entire country. The fact that anyone can be so polarizing, or choose one group over another, or choose, not overtly choose one group over another, but to minimize what is truly bad behavior. I mean, you know, how are you supposed to have faith in your leader, because that's what the president is, the president is my leader, when clearly preferences are being made? You know, a president, by the president of 340 million citizens, by the nature of the position, you must be inclusive of everyone. And to be not be inclusive, that polarizing nature is just beyond me, no matter who it was. If it was a liberal Democrat, I would be like, what are you talking about? You know, so I don't know how people do it. I know one person who is in the community who is very pro-Trump. I don't understand it, to the point where I don't want to understand it. I don't even want to hear the argument, the basis for any argument to defending you know, this kind of polarization. I just can't be bothered with it. So I am stumped. That's what I am, stumped and frustrated.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. I mean, the reason I wanted to ask you is because, again, whether it's been previous guests or just LGBT friends that I've talked to, some can find a rationalization. Some can say, hey, Fernando, listen, along economic lines and this and that, I'm fine. I can live with it, you know, as opposed to what the left maybe is offering. I mean, I've heard those arguments, and I'm sure maybe you have too.
I have heard those arguments. And I don't, and to me, there's no basis in fact. It's, you know, look at the economic situation. I mean, because of the pandemic. Now, is that the president's fault? Does this virus? No, it's not this president's fault. But the president, whoever the president is, has to manage the situation. But the fact that people, I think people, we have as human beings, we cherry pick, we pick and choose what's worth it to us and what's not, what matters and what doesn't, you know. And it's all, again, 340 million people live in this country. There are 340 million personal opinions, and what works for me may not work for you. And I think that's just the way it goes. People just, you know, they say people vote for their self-interest, and I guess we all do, we have to, but some of us also then vote for what, you know, is good for as many people as possible, except just not just for myself. But I don't understand it. You know, I find it offensive.
All right, fair enough. And again, we'll see in 27 days how the electorate feels. And certainly I'm sure they'll still be talked about and dissected well after, on the morning of November 4th and so on and so forth. So, Joe, before I let you go here, and ladies and gentlemen, again, if you're interested in learning more information about the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce, again, they're located 155 Willowbrook Boulevard, Suite 350 in Wayne, New Jersey, a little bit away from Willowbrook Mall. Not sure what's left of the mall, since I haven't really been out to malls lately because of COVID, but it's easy to get to. You can contact the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce at 973-869-9567. You can also shoot them an email, info@njlgbtchamber.org. Once again, folks, don't forget to like them on Facebook. Of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Also check them out, on YouTube and their LinkedIn page, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I think I did my research for this program today. So, folks, if you're interested in being involved, certainly if you are an LGBT business owner, certainly, again, on the website, www.njlgbtchamber.org, you'll see the Member Center on the tabs. You'll see the Get Involved tabs as well, in addition to the event and stay informed. Folks, they're an incredible organization. I'm really happy that I had the chance to plug the organization today, Joe. And before I let you go, I think I did a pretty good job of just describing every possible link that you need here for the organization. But if there's anything else I missed, I want to give you the floor. And then also, this is your chance now, because I've been the one asking questions. I've been the one interviewing you. I always like to give my guests the floor. And if you got a question for me, or if you want to pick my brain, the floor is yours, brother. What do you got?
Well, thank you so much, first of all, for inviting me on here today. I completely appreciate it, and to get a platform such as yours to be able to speak about the Chamber of Commerce and the LGBT business community and the LGBT community at large, you know, I'm indebted to you, and I love the work that you do with your podcast and the conversations you get going.
Thanks,
and that's
man.
Really the
Thank
important
you,
thing. It's really important. You know, I don't really have any questions to ask of you. I'm sorry to say, because I could listen to you all day long. So there's too many questions to ask you. But you know, what are you? You're keyed into everything. What trending? Let me ask you. What do you think the trending is in terms of the electorate for this particular election? I mean, we see that, you know, early voting is going crazy. I think Arizona started today, if I watched the news correctly this morning.
Correct.
You know, are you seeing any, I'm always interested in trends. What are you seeing in terms of news coverage or anything like that where you see it's going in a certain direction, this whole thing that's going on with all these people now testing positive right in the White House and the president's inner circle? Do you think that's going to have an impact on voters? Or you know, this pivoting of, you know, the president, you know, not, you know, wanting to be kind of tough in response to the virus, but now he gets it and so do others. What do you think as a media person with so much exposure to the elements, if you will, the political elements, what are you seeing?
Well, that's a really loaded question. Let me see if I can break it down as much as I can, dissect it. I feel like now the professor in me comes out. A couple of things, Joe. You know, here in New Jersey, it's a very different sort of political climate than I would argue than in the South and Midwest. And I have a lot of friends that live in that part of the country. I have friends that live in California, as far west as California. I have a lot of friends that live in Texas because I go to Texas often. I'm a big Cowboys fan. So, I mean, whenever I can visit the great state of Texas, I do. I think when it comes to legislative races, I think both for House seats and Senate seats, I think they're going to be very different and challenging. I think because of COVID, the traditional campaigning that we're so used to seeing state to state, I think has really been hindered by COVID. So I think it'll be very interesting what turnout will be like, whether it's the vote by mail, which I have an issue with, I think, because of all the chicanery we hear about and read about. But I think when it comes to the big office, I think that, listen, if you listen to my episodes of my podcast, and I think if you look at my social media, I mean, I do not apologize for being a center-right guy. I have some progressive positions that I hold. I think you can hear that in my voice and the way I express myself on my show. I think it's going to be challenging to look at how polling is, because we all learned 4 years ago that polling is not an exact science. It used to be. Again, I'm over 40, so I've seen a good amount of presidential elections, and normally when we watch polls, Joe, like, polls tend to be kind of correct. That wasn't the case 4 years ago. I kind of get the sense that that's probably going to be the case again. I don't know if it's the silent majority, which is what won the president, gave him his win 4 years ago. I think it's going to take more than just a silent majority. I think it's going to be these next two debates in whatever form they come, because obviously with the president testing positive for COVID-19, you know, being in Miami next week probably isn't likely for him. So whether he's on Zoom or whatever, I think Americans are going to take these next 27 days and think about, well, what do I want? You know, am I going to go by the record pre-COVID? Am I going to look at Joe Biden, a guy who cognitively is declining? And people might say, well, he may not even finish a term, and then we're going to be stuck with Kamala Harris. You know, Joe, for a lot of people in the country, you know, Kamala Harris is a scary person ideologically, you know, and you know, that might be enough to kind of sway some votes for the president. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets reelected, but I wouldn't be surprised if he loses, only because, you know, there's only so much you can overcome, whether it's the liberal media, whether it's polling, whether it's the economy, whether it's COVID. I'll say right now, I can't call it right now. I think it's still 27 days doesn't seem like a lot, but believe it or not, man, 27 days in politics can be like a lifetime.
I agree with you completely. I think it's completely up in the air. You know, it has to be. It's completely up in the air.
It really is. It really is. And I think it'll be interesting, again, these next two debates, whatever format they're going to be in, if they're going to be in, we'll see. We all know that what happened last week. I mean, listen, I'm a diehard pro wrestling fan. So the chaos and the mayhem, I live for that because I love WWF. I still watch it. I love all the hoopla and the hype and the bombastic natures, but I understand that it doesn't rub everybody the right way. And I get it. People like my parents were turned off and were like, wow, like this was a screaming match. This was nothing more than two, like our drunk uncles at the Thanksgiving table, you know, arguing about, yep. I don't know, you know, who was better, the Brooklyn Dodgers or the New York Yankees. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was kind of crazy, but But we'll find out what happens, you know, Joe, certainly. But again, I want to thank you for being on the podcast today. Certainly, when possible, do let everybody know how much you love Insider NJ, how much you love Politically Direct. Yeah. And later on this year, later on this fall, going into the winter, I definitely want to have you back on. Give our audience an update about the good work that the NJ LGBT Chamber is doing, and certainly to fill us in on the progress of the organization, even as we're still sort of enduring COVID. So I hope you'll come back on, bro. Hope you've enjoyed the experience today here on Politically Direct. And again, I hope you tell everyone you know via social media how much you love the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me here today, giving the chamber a platform of visibility, and I would be back anytime you want me. And your podcast and Insider NJ are certainly friends of the chamber, so we're good.
I appreciate that. Well, listen, absolutely. I have your cell phone. I got your email. I will certainly hit you up. In the meantime, have a happy Halloween. Hope you have a great turnout tomorrow for your event, and we'll talk to you again soon here on Politically Direct, Joseph.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one, bro. Folks,
thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, man. Folks, what a great interview today with Joseph Renga, the president of the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce. That's a mouthful, sorry. Here in New Jersey. Again, if you're interested in getting involved with the New Jersey LGBT Chamber, folks, again, as I mentioned, they're located at 155 Willowbrook Boulevard, Suite 350 in Wayne, New Jersey, 07470. Contact them for more information, 973-869-9567. Also, shoot them an email, info@njlgbtchamber.org. And, of course, don't forget to like them on Facebook, follow them on Instagram and Twitter, and also check out their LinkedIn as well as their YouTube page. And whatever you can do to get involved with them, folks, I tell you, they're a worthwhile organization. There are a lot of people working hard there for no pay. And when they volunteer their time, like with any advocacy or any nonprofit organization, folks, you got to commend them because you know what? They're giving of themselves and their time. As we all know, ladies and gentlemen, time is extremely valuable. And we've learned that in 2020, especially because of COVID-19. So I can't say enough again about what a great interview that was today. Folks, you can be able to listen to it in its entirety. Once again, at www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's plural, podcasts. And you'll be seeing it up on the website later today. And so, again, folks, keep an eye out. Remember, Thursday, October the 8th, two great events, one in the morning, one in the evening. Check it out, folks, and make sure you support the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce. Well, folks, that's our show for this week here online via Blog Talk Radio and Insider NJ. If you have a suggestion or a topic for a guest or any issue coming up, do me a favor, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, I welcome your feedback. I do answer my emails promptly, I think, for the most part. I know some of my students might disagree, but I do answer them promptly. So write to me, folks, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram @ProfessorFernandoUribe. Again, I know a lot of you enjoy my Instagram stories. You know, they're a little political sometimes, some politically incorrect humor, some sports memes, some pop culture stuff, some, you know, motivational quotes, whatever. I know a lot of you enjoy them, and that's why I make it a point to put up good Instagram stories every single day. So I hope you follow me on Instagram, folks. Again, hit me up on Twitter @ProfessorAskUribe. Again, if you follow the show here as well as my other media projects, you know, I think where I sit politically, but, you know, I'm really open-minded, so definitely check me out on Twitter when possible. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook, folks, 1,000-plus likes and counting. And certainly don't forget to check out Insider NJ when you go to their website, www.insidernj.com. And it's the best political coverage of what's going on in New Jersey and the best journalism, I would argue, anywhere in the Garden State. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, who sometimes drives me a little bit crazy with some of his, like, you know, rants or some of his, like, posts, but I'm sure I'd piss him off too, so I think it's equal. But again, he's an exceptional columnist, and he is indeed the editor-in-chief of Insider NJ. Folks, also check out my exceptional teammates, Jay Lassiter, Brett Snowflack, even Alan Steinberg, who sometimes is a little delusional, but I love them just the same. And again, folks, you can't go wrong with the journalism brought to you by Insider NJ every single day. Again, make sure you like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, click on the website. The Morning Intelligence Briefing is right there. Click on the subscribe button, and you've got it waiting for you in your inbox every single day. And again, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Well, once again, folks, that's our show for this week here. If you missed any part of the podcast, you can listen to today's episode and all of my previous episodes in its entirety. Once again, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet, go to www.insiderengine.com/podcast. And folks, again, without you, my low listening audience, you know, this podcast would not be award winning. So again, I love y'all for tuning in every week here, whether it's, you know, on the archives, whether it's live. Hey, without you, the loyal listening audience, this show would not be possible. The success of the show would not even be a realization. So again, I love y'all for supporting me and supporting Politically Direct. So again, folks, whether it's in your morning commute, you're getting your daily workout, walking your dog, hopefully again wearing your mask and being socially distant, you're doing laundry, for my students doing their homework, guess what? Take a break, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, folks, it's real. It's here. It is Politically Direct. Have a good one. Wayne, New Jersey, all the good people out there in Wayne, again, tuning in on the podcast. Folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.